After graduating, I worked for 2 years as a water engineer. I designed sewers. And since then, I've been in church work, studying, working, training. And I put my hand up. I don't know what it's like to do your job, not exactly, or to study what you study, or to spend my days doing whatever it is that you do. And yet, wonderfully, our God knows. And our God, he knows what it's like to roll up his sleeves and get his hands dirty. And in case you think that's a cheeky thing to say, remember that Jesus Christ grew up as a carpenter, not as a philosopher or a kind of serene emperor somewhere. He grew up as a carpenter. As a child, he'd have hammered nails into wood. Yet one day they hammered nails into his body. And that cross marks a spot, doesn't it, where our rescue begins. Trust in Jesus and he's taken the curse. That curse from Genesis 3 and 4. He's taken the curse for our wrongdoing. Follow Jesus, and though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we wait for the perfect new creation, where work will once more be a joy, where the gardeners will tend 12 trees bearing fruit in season, and the leaves will be for the healing of the nations. But in the meantime, how shall we live in this area of work and study? That's one of the many practical subjects which the Bible book of Proverbs teaches us. How to live in this area of work and study. This proverb talks generally about work, but it's very applicable to those of you who are studying at school or college as well. So whether you're retired, busy, just not paid, whether you're at school or unemployed or somewhere in between, how should we work? How should we study? The first big point from Proverbs is this. Work hard. Work hard. Work hard and don't be lazy. Let's turn over, can we, to chapter 10? Proverbs chapter 10. I'm just going to read one or two verses, but there are dozens that might be an exaggeration. At least 10 verses in Proverbs that will speak about working hard. Proverbs 10 verse 4. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. Work hard and don't be lazy. I guess we all know people who work really hard and actually are poor. And lazy people who've got plenty of money. This is a proverb, it's a command and an observation. Work hard because generally speaking we observe that hard-working people do better and lazy people do worse. I guess that's not rocket science. But to help us get the point, the book of Proverbs paints a vivid portrait of a guy called the sluggard. A sluggard, it means someone who's kind of sluggish or lazy. Let's get to know this sluggard. Turn, would you, to chapter 26. Proverbs 26 and verse 13. In my mind, the sluggard is kind of the fool in the literary sense, the joker, the fool of Proverbs. Here he is. Proverbs 26 and verse 13. The sluggard says, there is a lion in the road, a fierce lion roaming the streets. As a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on his bed. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He is too lazy to bring it back to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who answer discreetly. The sluggard. Can you picture the sluggard, maybe in his stripy pajamas, underneath his mountain of duvet? And you open the door, turn the light on. Perhaps one eye opens lazily and he moans, leave me alone. Leave me alone. There's a lion outside. There might be a lion in the street. I better stay tucked up nice and warm in my bed. If we offer him a bowl of cereal, maybe, I don't know, some porridge, some Cheerios. He puts his hand in the gloop, but he's too lazy to lift his hand to his mouth. Instead, he just rolls over, snoring like a creaky hinge as he's attached to his bed back to sleep. What a sluggard.
wonder if you know anyone like that. I guess some of us are the opposite. Some of us are workaholics.
We live for work, possibly. But other times, maybe we do make excuses.
Maybe not a line, but maybe there's bad weather outside. Or maybe we procrastinate. Just 5 minutes more sleep, just 10 minutes. Wonder how many things we've started and not completed. Books, DIY jobs, hobbies, projects. What does God say to the sluggard? Proverbs chapter 6. No need to turn, but you can if you wish. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 6. God says to the sluggard, go to the ant, ye sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Well, hands up if you've ever seen an ant sit still for half an hour, a live ant. No, maybe 10 minutes, a minute, 10 seconds. Ants keep moving, don't they? They keep busy, always working. And God says, let's work hard. Don't be lazy. Don't be lazy and don't take shortcuts. If you flick over to chapter 12. Chapter 12 and verse 11. He who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. He who works his hand will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. We'd all love, I suppose, to make a quick buck. Low effort, high gain. But usually it says that's a fantasy. As another proverb says, the plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. Let's work hard. Don't take shortcuts. We've heard of economic bubbles, haven't we? The housing bubbles, the dot-com bubble, that kind of thing. First economic bubble was in the 17th century, the first recorded one. In Netherlands, it was called tulip mania. You might have heard of it. People were selling flower bulbs, tulip bulbs, at incredibly inflated prices. The price was going up and up. And that was okay, but the problem came when people started gambling on what tulip bulbs might cost in the future. At the end of the season, as the bulbs were growing in the ground. And they thought if they just made the right deal, they could make a huge profit for almost no work. One bulb sold for 12 acres of land. Another for 10 times a craftsman, 10 times a skilled craftsman's annual salary with the cost of one tulip bulb. Some of them would change hands 10 times in a day. And yet the buyers never saw the bulbs, only slips, receipts of paper. Of course, in the end, the bubble burst, the market crashed, and lots of people looked awfully foolish. Now, I'm not an economist. I'm not here to critique modern city traders or anything like that. Not in any way, shape, or form. But generally in life, God says here, don't take shortcuts. Understand the big gain takes big efforts. Let's work hard. And what would this look like for us? Realize that many of you do work very hard. For some of you, it's a real slog at school. Or it's tough in the workplace, but you're working hard. You're sticking it out. Others would love to have a job, or you're getting old, and you'd love to have the energy that you used to have, and this is very painful for you, but you're not putting up your feet all the time. You're working hard, whether it's looking for a job or finding other ways to be useful. And on top of your work, you're putting in long shifts at church or with other charities or with looking after family. You're working hard. And the Bible says the Lord grants sleep to those he loves. Some of us might be in danger of burnout, and we need to learn that biblical principle of one day's rest in seven. Sometimes having that evening off. Sometimes we need to rest. Yeah, the emphasis in the material we're looking at today is work hard. And how does that work out? Let me throw out some ideas. I guess at school, and it's quite a long time for me now, but I guess at school it means do your homework every day. Or honour your, it must mean, mustn't it? Honour your parents and teachers by working hard at your studies. And be grateful for their help, where your parents help you. At the same time, be prepared to organise yourself. Where your parents give you freedom, take the opportunity not just to slob out in front of that screen all the time, but to learn self-discipline, to grow up in this area of organisation. As a young teenager, I was a bit lazy looking back. Remember, coming up to my GCSEs or O-levels as I did, I'm not quite that old, but I lived abroad. You could do them abroad then. In the couple of years running up to those, I didn't work probably as hard as I should have done. And 6 weeks before the exams, I panicked, and I lost a lot of sleep in those 6 weeks. It was torture. I learned never again. And so for my A-levels, I worked steadily hard from day one, and it was okay. Well, at school. Others of us are in the workplace. What does hard work look like there? I guess it means not spending half our time browsing the internet in the office. Check the web if we must in our coffee break, if we really can't find a real person to relate with. But I say this to myself as much as any of us. Let's not allow Facebook or the BBC News or my temptation is the sports update, the cricket. Let's not allow that to eat into our work time illegitimately. Maybe your workplace is actually at home and you're a full-time parent and you'll probably work extremely hard. But be encouraged when you're changing that explosive nappy or doing that sixth school trip of the day. Don't give up. Don't say you're not cut out for it. Right now, that is your privilege and your responsibility. Maybe that's not you. Actually, you're unemployed just now. And I can't imagine the pain of that. But someone who was unemployed told me it helped a little to think of their job search as their unpaid job, the job of looking for a job. Maybe some who are unemployed look for dozens, hundreds of jobs, and I guess it can be so wearing down, such an emotional roller coaster. Well, keep going. Keep going. Others of you are retired, and maybe there's a temptation there to do as the world does. I guess we see a lot of non-Christians who retire and they spend their time playing golf or drinking tea. A friend of mine, his parents retired and they moved immediately to, just next to Stansted Airport. They could be constantly in Florida or other places. Now, I guess most of us won't be flying off to Florida all the time. I see you working very hard, actually, those of you who are retired. So let's be encouraged in that, to use the time you have as you have energy and health, to volunteer and to use your time to talk with people, to visit people, to pray for people, to pray together. I pray God, by God's grace that you'll model to the rest of us how to use our leisure time, our evenings and weekends, to serve God by serving others. Well, there's the first big point of Proverbs. Work. Work hard. That's what to do. I guess many of us are working hard. Or at least we know we ought to. But how should we do it? How do we go about it? If that's the quantity, what's the quality of work to be? Well, secondly, I think we're going to speed up slightly. Secondly, work honestly. Work honestly. Turn with you to chapter 11 and verse 1. Page 452. Chapter 11, verse 1. The Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight. The Lord abhors, he hates dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight. There's a whole bunch of verses in Proverbs that say that kind of thing. Maybe you've got at home rather dodgy sets of weighing scales. And if they're in the kitchen, that can be really annoying, can't it? If it's in the bathroom, occasionally it might be encouraging to have a dodgy pair of wainscots in the bathroom. But apparently in Bible times, traders used dodgy scales on purpose. A shopkeeper might trick a customer into thinking they were buying 1.5 kilos of, I don't know, flour, when actually they were buying just 1 kilo with dodgy scales. And God says that's wrong. Don't cheat. Work honestly. Don't cheat. Don't bribe. As another proverb says, a greedy man brings trouble to his family, but he who hates bribes will live. Let's work honestly. Turn over with you to chapter 20. I see one particular kind of dishonest thing that happens at work. Proverbs 20 verse 14. A steward read this. It's no good. It's no good, says the buyer. Then off he goes and boasts about his purchase. Guess that kind of lie could happen quite often in business or even in kind of private kind of eBay kind of market. It's no good. It's no good. Give me a discount, please. And then goes and boasts about his purchase. The University of Westminster did a survey of company directors. And it found that most directors of companies would choose to break the law if they thought they could get away with it. By contrast, let me tell you about someone else. Jeanette was a Christian. This is a true story. Jeanette was a Christian. She was a humble secretary in an army base. One day the phone rang and Jeanette picked it up. And her boss was across the table. He was a rather scary, tough military man. And he whispered to her furiously, tell them I'm out. Tell them I'm out. And Jeanette said to him, I can't do that. And he said, why? I'm telling you, tell them I'm out. She said, if I lie for you, you won't know when I'm lying to you. I had the privilege of going to a school where the headmaster was a Christian. I remember the headmaster talking with me once about another schoolboy, a friend of mine called Ben. I remember the headmaster said to me, the thing about Ben is he's got integrity. And the headmaster said to me, there's nothing more important I could say about someone than that they've got integrity. After the end of the Second World War, for 3 decades, Samuel Goldwyn was the most successful film producer in America. Samuel Goldwyn said this. He said, I don't want any yes men around me. You know, men who just say yes, yes, yes to whatever you say. He said, I want everybody to tell me the truth, even if it costs them their jobs. Work honestly. I wonder how that might work out practically. Again, I don't know exactly the challenges you face. We'll each need to work it out. Let me throw out some ideas. At school, don't copy your friend's homework. Don't crib from something else without referencing it. If you don't get your homework done, don't make excuses. Just apologize. At work, it's kind of similar, isn't it? When you fill out your timesheet, do they still have timesheets these days? Probably all electronicized or something, isn't it? Is that a word? You know what I mean? When you fill out your timesheet, don't cheat your boss. Don't cheat your clients by assigning work to a client that shouldn't be assigned to them. Maybe you're in a bidding war. Don't say it's your final bid if it isn't. Maybe you're going to miss a deadline. Be honest about that. And watch out for bribes from a client or a potential client. Or you have to think about how that applies in the real world where you work. Maybe your job is to look after your children at home. What if we make promises to our children? We promise them something good. Well, actually, we warn them if they carry on being naughty, something bad will happen. Well, let's keep our promises. Let's make sure they know that we're people of our word. Maybe, again, that's not you. Actually, you're facing unemployment. Well, in your CVs and your applications, be honest. And if others of us claim benefits, again, let's be honest. How shall we work and study? Work hard, work honestly. Maybe we're thinking, that's all very well. I guess we already know we ought to work hard. We probably know we ought to work honestly. Many non-Christians would agree with that, wouldn't they, many of them? So what makes us different as Christians? Well, because of this, thirdly and finally, work for him. Work for him. And not for that guy on the screen, but work for God. Work for God. Turn, please, to the final chapter of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 31, which is a fascinating chapter. It describes the elusive wife of noble character, the ultimate case study in wise living. It's a woman who, she works at home looking after her family. She actually also works in business looking after her assets. But what's her secret? Why does she do so well? Does she charm her way to the top with good looks and flirting eyes? No, let's see. Proverbs 31 and verse 30, the very last verses of the book. Proverbs 31 verse 30. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. Let her works bring her praise at the city gate. Here's the ideal worker, but what is the key thing to her? It is that she fears the Lord. She fears the Lord. I guess that's not surprising if you've been coming for a few weeks, because the fear of the Lord is the theme of Proverbs, isn't it? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, we've seen almost every week. So how can we work and study wisely, ultimately by fearing the Lord? Or as we'd put it today, Christians work for him. We work for the Lord. See, if we fear the boss, we'll work ultimately only for the boss. He'll be the highest level of authority for us. If we fear exam results, or stockholders, or human respect, we'll work for those things. But if we fear the Lord, and not the terror of judgment, not that kind of fear, but the humility of knowing his judgment is turned away, the humility of trusting Jesus, actually, to turn it away, the humility of following him, if we have that kind of fear of the Lord, then we'll work hard and study hard for him. For his glory and pleasure. Very last reference, if you want to turn, I'm going to be in Colossians for a moment, in the New Testament. Colossians chapter 3. The author is writing in the context of work and authority. He's particularly writing in the terms of slaves and masters, not necessarily to approve of that master and slave system, but writing within that context. And he says, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for man, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. Let's work for him. If we can really get this, it ought to transform the way we work and study. It should transform our attitude to the boss. See, if we're working for the Lord, then we'll be loyal even to a bad boss, so long as it doesn't contradict what God says. We'll be loyal even to a bad boss because we're serving the Lord, not ultimately the boss. To transform our attitude to menial or unpaid work. Just because your role is to look after that elderly relative or that child. Just because your role is to volunteer or to look for work. That does not make you any less significant. Because our responsibility is a gift from God. Our mandate is from him. To transform our attitude to exams and assessments. For years, I think my approach to exams was a bit wrong. I did learn to work hard after those GCSE O-levels. But I was working hard to get a certain grade. I thought, I need to get a B. Or I need to get a university. I needed to get a 2-1, which was that kind of magic number everyone seemed to think was the thing to get. And it was only when I was at university that I read this again, and it tweaked for the first time that ultimately I'm to work for the Lord and not for grades. And I still was to work hard and study hard, but it was up to God in the end to give me whatever grade he thought I deserved or was right for me. And my good job was to work hard. Now, I suppose actually I was pretty intelligent and I didn't need to work that hard for that grade. I might have cruised along. But if I was working for the Lord, I'd work harder to honour him, and kind of vice versa, I suppose. Now, in the end, I got a grade lower than I'd aimed for. But in God's providence, I was disappointed at the time. But looking back, it was okay. We work for him. We work for him. And finally, that attitude of working for God should transform our evangelism. The top of our prayer list as we go into work in the morning is not necessarily making money or making friends. The top of our prayer list for work and study is to honour God in the way that we work and in the words that we use. So evangelism becomes not only the big event that we invite our colleagues to do that. But actually, we're more able to do that because week by week, day by day, we've had this attitude of longing to honour God before our colleagues in our work and study, in the way that we do our work, in the conversations that we have. The Bible talks of conversations seasoned with salt, doesn't it? So conversations seasoned, not necessarily with you know, a complete gospel outline every time, but with ordinary conversations that honour Jesus, where he's not deleted out of our conversation at work. Let's work for him. We began by saying that work and study are not evil in God's sight, like a Pandora's box. Work is God's good creation, terribly scarred, actually, by human wrongdoing. And yet, wonderfully, Jesus has come to redeem us for a new creation where work will be perfect again. How should we work and study? We've seen tonight, work hard, work honestly, work for him.